As I said before, our gospel reading this morning is the telling of the baptism of Jesus, which is the beginning of his public ministry. And this from the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 3. Then Jesus came from Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him by saying, "I need to be baptized by you. And you, do you come to me?" But Jesus answered him, "Let it be so for now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness." And then he consented. And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came up from the water, suddenly the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased." The Gospel of the Lord. Now we remember that the Gospels are all each in their own way trying to give us an impression or their understanding of Jesus and what he came to reveal to us from God. At the beginning of all the Gospels, we find some statement that suggests that Jesus is directly from God. In fact, in the early church's mind, was indeed Son of God. And through the infancy stories of Matthew and Luke, and through the prologue of John's Gospel, that becomes very, very clear. But I don't want to dwell on that because I think we all at least have some knowledge of that, that that's what they were teaching. I want to point out something special in this Gospel that most of us, I think, may not understand. When the heavens open, or before he is baptized, John says, "You should be baptizing me. I shouldn't be baptized by you." And he says, the gospel says, that Jesus says, "Let it be so for now to fulfill all righteousness." Now, righteousness, in many instances, translates into something to do with fulfilling the law. Even if we're talking about God's law, it still comes down to fulfilling the law. What's important to recognize in this gospel, the word righteousness means to fulfill God's will, not God's law, God's will. And so all of us who are baptized by invitation are people who are called to fulfill God's will. I don't know about you, but I certainly in my lifetime have wondered what exactly God's will is for me and how in God's name do I find it. The interesting thing is, I think it's important for us to recognize that we have culturally, as well as I think in religious culture, over the centuries, codified and made hard fast the way of life of a church or of a denomination. And as long as we do what that church or denomination says we should do, then we are fulfilling God's law. When I went to the seminary at 13, 14, I entered in a system that basically told us what God's will was. We received a little book that we read out of every day by rule, and it was called The Good Seminarian. And The Good Seminarian taught us everything we needed to know, coupled with the structure of the rector and then the faculty, and I guess then us. That was the pecking order from which we knew, really, if we had any question, what God's law was about, what God wanted us to do. The rule itself was very stringent. It was based on a mix of the monastic and the military, because whatever you were supposed to do, you knew exactly what you were told. The rule in the course on the good seminarian book, the rule was defined as the will of God for you. So if you followed the rule, you would be doing God's will. And we followed the rule most of the time. We followed the rule, and we're very sure we were doing what God wanted us to do. And when we had doubts, we turned to our faculty, our confessors, or the rector to find out some clarification about something, and they made it very clear what God's will was for us. The rule became a way of life, And for those of us who went through 12 years of seminary, and by the way, up until the 11th year of my seminary career of 12 years, just before the year before I was ordained a priest, the rule was exactly the same. We were being treated at 13 and 14 exactly in the same way we were living as adults, 24 and 25. Nothing had changed. Of course, if you know our history, we rebelled in our third year and overthrew the whole system, changed the whole face of seminaries. Now they're empty. Not really. There are a few people who are there. But it became much more respectful of the other understanding of the will of God. The will of God can never be dictated by rule. We may choose to live by a rule, but to sandwich the will of God between the pages of a rule is really not exactly what Jesus ever taught us. In fact, if we look at Jesus' attitude toward the temple, we find that following the rules was giving you permission to be in the temple. It may have had nothing to do with God's will for you. And so the gospel here opens us up to understanding that God's will for us is always a process. We're always in a journey. We're always going somewhere, and God is taking us there. Depending on how you see God in your life, depending on how open you are to direction from the Holy Spirit, you have a better understanding or appreciation of what will of God is for you. Excuse me. But to illustrate a little bit, moving from the law and the rules to becoming responsible for my own hearing of the will of God is a big jump. Excuse me. It's a big jump because now we have to all of a sudden look at ourselves and say, I am in charge of finding God's will for me. And that's heavy duty. You can see why most of us would prefer somebody telling us what to do and how to do it and leaving it at that. A few years back in another ministry of another church, people gave witnesses. And there was one witness that always caught me, and I remember always. A person got up, a young woman, a mother of four children, and she was talking about what the church meant to her. But in the process, she introduced the idea of the will of God for her, which I thought was kind of refreshing because so many of us never think about it that way. And she said, I'm bringing up my children in as good a Christian home as I can. I make sure that they are there for church school on Sundays. I bring them to the activities around the church and keep them always occupied with good things that they will learn their values of life. And more than that, I cannot do. I think I'm doing the will of God for me. And I found that very refreshing. Because ultimately, listening to the details and circumstances of our own lives, therein, in those details, is the voice of God. You know the old saying, the devil in the details? Well, this is God in the details. If we listen and read and reflect on the circumstances and situations of our life, the will of God is there to be uncovered. In another way, there was a young man I had occasion to be with for a couple of years when he was in our church. He was a bomber in the Vietnam War. And he was one of the ones that dropped an awful lot of napalm on villages and on areas in Agent Orange to deflower everything so that the enemy would have no hiding place. About midstream of his career, he suddenly had this incredible sense of guilt. And he felt guilty because he knew he was dropping these things, and there were lots of people who were being harmed who really just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. They were no more responsible for what was going on politically in the country than you or I were. But it occurred to him that his faith in God was truly on the block And he tried to fly as few missions after that as possible. He had a law, and there was a rule, and he was supposed to take whatever the commander said to do and do. That was his job. But you see, when we get into those places where things happen in our lives, if we are listening to our lives, suddenly he became aware that what he was doing and participating in was a real faith crisis for himself. Justified in so many ways, his personal reflection brought him to our church, to a major, major confession and to a couple of years of therapeutic and spiritual guidance to deal with the conflict that he lived with when he didn't have control over his own life. God is in the details. Sometimes God is very clear. Sometimes not so much. And sometimes, when we find out, it's hard to know where to go. On the other hand, there was a man, a young man who was a legislator. He no longer is, so don't try to guess what I'm talking about. But he was part of our church. And he came to me one day and said, you know, I'm really having a problem with my job. Okay. What's the problem? He said, I get up every morning and I go to work and I am delving into a world of lies. He said, there is so much untruth that is bantered around. There are so many false judgments, so many burdens laid on people in the name of progress, in the name of correcting something that seems to need correcting, or getting something passed that you feel passionate about. He said, I cannot lie anymore. His faith was challenged. And he spent a good deal of time trying to make the decision that would change the rest of his life. And he did. And eventually, he left the legislature. And he stays away from politics as much as possible. That doesn't mean we condemn all politics. This was one man's version, listening to the details of his life and realizing there was a conflict and had to make a decision. These kinds of things really happen every day. And in truth, as we say many times, it's very, very hard to be a Christian person. I mean a real Christian person. It's easy to be a church person. All I have to know is what the church requires of me. And in some instances, how much of it I can avoid. But we do, and we live. But the question always is there. What really is the will of God for me? It's easy for me to stand here and say to you, listen to the details of your life. Listen to the circumstances of your days. God's will is somewhere to be found in there. It's a very hard thing to do. But Jesus begins his ministry in the Gospels. After he is baptized, he is driven, in Mark's Gospel, driven into the desert. In Matthew's Gospel, he goes off into the desert. Why is he doing that? We always think, of course, that's kind of a retreat, the vision quest. So he comes out and does his ministry. Truth is, it's in the word righteousness, to do and fulfill the righteousness. Here is his first example to us as a human being, wondering where his faith is going to land him, wondering where indeed God is trying to lead him. And he goes off there, not knowing what's going to happen, but he goes there to fulfill what he thinks and believes is God's will for him. And when he emerges from that desert, he becomes a very powerful preacher, minister, healer, orator, family guy, friend, compassionate person. There's so many ways to talk around the details of your life and my life. But I know God's will for me at one point was very clear when I left ministry. And God's will for me was very clear when I listened to my life in Fond Louise. God's will is very clear for me today because I have children and grandchildren. They give the poles in which I live my life. And if I listen closely, there are some times when those relationships, the will of God for me, is very challenging. Sometimes it seems overwhelming. And you may find that true in your life. Bottom line is, brothers and sisters, as we've said so many times, God is in hot pursuit of each one of us, has always been, will always be. We just said that to Donovan and Gabriel. God is in hot pursuit of you. What Jesus teaches us is to be open to the possibility that what is happening in your life right now may indeed open you up to hear God's will for you in a very strange, maybe a very powerful way. You never know where God's Spirit is going to lead you, which is like why we like church, because we know what we're supposed to do. This other way is wide open and too scary. But I end my thought this morning with this. When in doubt, when you can't find any answer, when you don't know what God has in mind for you, then just simply subtract 7:25 from Tuesday, and you'll get your answer. And there is found God's blessing. Amen.